record. Okay, today is the 14th, I think, October 14th, and I'm with Keith and Nancy Green. And I, and you know, I'm going to take my mask off. We had talked about, you know, you did a river trip in the summer of 95 with Moki Mac. And I had a question about, you were working up at the rim that summer, and I had a question about what was your title? Was it ranger or seasonal ranger, or did you have a different title?
I was a seasonal ranger, and I was doing interpretation. Interpretive ranger, I guess.
Okay, and that was for people coming into the visitor center.
That was for that, and also I was giving talks, and also I was doing walks along the rim.
Okay.
And encountering people there.
And so I believe that that was your second summer at the working on the top, or did you go there even before that? So this was the summer of 95. I mean, I know you were down in the bottom for ages, and then you went to Iowa, and then you came back. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just trying to remember, trying to figure, what was the year that you started doing seasonal rangering? When she was working on top, too, and you guys were living on the South Rim. Was that about 94 or 95? 94.
What's Nancy saying?
Nancy says 94 for when you guys moved into, when you actually moved into the employee housing. I think that was when your same year your mom died.
Right.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to move on to your holiday letter for 96. Let me just see if there's anything in particular at first that I wanted to ask you from here.
That's neat that you were able to look that up in the holiday letters.
I love these holiday letters.
Yeah.
Yeah, they are so great. You know, you talk a bit about in 96 that there was a very harsh fire season and stringent restrictions on forest use. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about, you know, generally about when you guys were up on top, about the whole thing as we went into this more of a drought and fires became more prevalent around here. Can you remember much about? Say again? It was hard to take the dog out and around? Because of the smoke?
Oh, yeah. No, because the forest was closed.
Oh, okay. How did that impact, like, the visitors and all that? What was that like when, if you had smoke and fire? I mean, we may be out of order here, but just sort of generally, this is the first time that it's mentioned that it was a bad fire season, was 96.
I can't remember 96 that well, but
maybe just generally, what was it like if there was a lot of fires on the top?
I don't remember it ever that year being such that it was smoky on top. It was just, you know, it was just so dry.
Mm-hmm.
That they closed everything.
Okay, gotcha. They just put restrictions in place.
Right. And the tourists couldn't have campfires and that sort of thing. But I don't remember fire actually coming close to us in 96. Later it did.
Okay, yeah, it said harsh, it was a really rough on the trees, I guess because it was so dry, a very mild winter, making...
Well, that was the year, I think, that was the year that the Ponderosa, or not Ponderosa, across at the junipers, the pinions. The pinion pines were all turning brown because of bark beetles.
Okay.
And it was really, it was killing trees, so it was a sad year, that's for sure. But yeah, I remember that the forest was just a mess. It was really brown, dark brown, or not dark brown, but brown.
But brown.
Yeah.
And then, you, as in your job as an interpretive ranger up there, did you in the evenings do the campfire talks and all that?
Yes.
Yes. Do you remember anything particular about any of those? Any weird events that happened or interesting people or...
I don't remember exactly which year it was, but we had I had written an article. I can find out what year that was, probably too.
Mm-hmm.
I had written an article or a paper for the Arizona Historical Society, and presented it in Prescott, and
I think that was after 95 or 96, though, right?
It could have been.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder just if you had any memories generally of those fireside talks. What are some of the things you would talk to them about? Was it mainly history stuff or natural history? Did you have a certain...
Gosh. Oh, I'm trying to remember that far back. I must have had a talk that was... I must have had a talk back then, but...
Can't really remember.
Before I did the Phantom Ranch one.
Yes. Did you have freedom?
Yeah, I don't know.
Could you pick anything you wanted to talk about, or did you have, did they tell you these are the topics you need to cover?
No, we could make our own talk.
Well, that's good to know. I never knew that. Okay.
Yeah, it could be about outer space or anything, but it was, we could do whatever we wanted.
But it was usually had something to do with the canyon?
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. All right. And then I'm also seeing here that this was the year that...
I probably didn't have an evening program that early.
That in 96?
Yeah, 96, because that might have been... Early 90s.
You were a summer ranger on the rim. I know that, but I don't.
Yeah.
I'll let you think about that, okay?
Okay.
And I'll ask you, Nancy. It says that you were nominated by your principal for Coconino County Teacher of the Year and won that year. I gotta get closer. Say again. I'm having trouble hearing her. You.
What? The plaque's on the wall.
Oh, the plaque is on the wall.
In the office.
In the office over there? Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll look at that. And, I mean, that's a pretty big deal to win Teacher of the Year. So that was really nice of, you know, she must have been very impressed with the job you were doing to nominate you. Yes. It's quite an honor. Because you realize, you know, people from all over Coconino County were nominated for that. Yep, and here it is. And that was special ed. And also you said you had gifted kids too? Or no, just special ed kids. Okay. Well, that's a hard group. And you think the principal appreciated how much work you put into it? Do you remember anything about, you know, that year that you won that might have, you know, been the thing that made her nominate you? Was there anything in particular with the kids, or was it just at what you dealt with normally? She was very close. Closed person. Say again. At that school.
Yes.
But she must have thought you were doing a pretty superb job, right? Because that's, you know, a big deal to win the County Teacher of the Year.
Sure.
So
that was when, I mean, those years there were, the neat thing was that, and correct me if I'm wrong, Nancy, but the thing was that, you know, we're at the Grand Canyon. And we could get, and Nancy could get authors who were touring. Maybe I'm thinking of your library years.
When you would bring the authors in? Okay. That was later then. But we'll save it for later then, when you brought the authors in, because that's no small feat either to bring, to contact authors and bring them in. Okay.
95.
Okay, and then that, yeah, this was 96. Okay, and that was also the year that they shut down the government, it says.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember anything about that? They shut it down and things got weird. And it said you were headed for Flagstaff one day and many National Guard vehicles were headed down the road to take over the canyon.
That's
I think
right.
Maybe this is what you wrote, Keith?
Yeah. Yeah, they were. The governor had said, okay, if the federal government isn't going to run Grand Canyon, then we will. And they sent, he sent the National Guard to take over Grand Canyon National Park.
That must have been a little scary.
Yeah, it was. And the superintendent, who was the superintendent at that time? Anyway, the superintendent, I can't remember who the superintendent was.
It wasn't Steve Martin. Was that too long before, right? Yeah.
Anyway, he met him at the park gate. And they had a little conference there and decided not to take over the park.
Oh, so he talked them into turning around?
Right.
Wow.
Right.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, so
Governor Fife Symington was the governor.
Okay.
And you, it says that you thought you were going to witness a revolution, but I guess it was prevented.
Yeah.
Okay.
That was pretty exciting, though.
And then you also say, Keith, that you thought you would be. You thought you would be without a job that year, but they found the money to hire you in 96. And you actually got to work a month and a half longer than you thought in 96. So you must have been there into the fall, huh?
Yeah. What I was doing is summertime, I was working as a seasonal ranger, and in the wintertime, I was home, and I was writing articles about Phantom Ranch, and I had the editor of the Grand Canyon News was. Heselton, what was her first name? Kyle. Kyle Heselton was the editor, who was a friend of ours, and I suggested that I could write a weekly article about Phantom Ranch, and so I wrote one that was called Stories of Phantom Ranch, and so I wrote stories about everything from the history, before we were there to things that were happening while I was there.
And how did you research it? Did you go through old newspapers, or how did you get the material for the stories?
Most of the material I got from just I did research for it, because that's basically what I used to do that paper for the Arizona Historical Society.
And you said in here that the Grand Canyon Association decided not to publish your book that you had a plan to turn all of these into a book, right?
Right.
And do you know why that was? Why they decided not to? Because it seems like it would be perfect, a perfect fit for the association.
Because they didn't have any money.
Oh, well, there, that explains it.
there was all short with money, so. So, yeah.
Well, that must have been a bummer.
Yeah, it was. It was very disappointing. And, because they didn't seem to have enough money for things, that they just didn't think that a Phantom Ranch was that important, as it seemed like, that it was worth spending money on it. There was at the time a little brochure about Phantom Ranch, which was just a rough outline of the history of Phantom Ranch, that they were, that they had, that you could purchase for, $2 or something.
Like in the visitor center or at the association store or something?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. So they figured that was enough.
Okay. And you do say in here that you were considering putting it into another format that other publishers might be able to use. Do you know if you ever did that?
I I've been working on that ever since. It's
okay.
Been like a lifetime
project to project. Kind of get it into a format that it can be used, right?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so I'm going to move into 97 because it kind of is helping to jog everyone's mind, this wonderful annual letter. And let's see. Okay, it said in March of 97, Keith went to work for Grand Canyon Association at the Visitor Center. Do you remember that?
Uh-huh.
So this is a different job than being working, or is it the same kind of job?
It was the same job. It's just I've been paid by the Grand Canyon Association.
Okay. Go ahead.
One more time.
Oh, he wore a different shirt. Okay. Okay. So the association shirt is different than...
Yeah, it's not, it doesn't have the arrowhead on it.
Okay. But they paid him.
Yes.
Through the association.
Yeah.
Not through... or because the association is a different... Or does money come... Don't they have their own money? Right?
Well, Grand Canyon Association makes their money by selling books.
Right.
So...
And how, is that how they pay the salaries of their people?
Right. Right.
Okay. Okay. And let's see. That was the year of Comet Hale-Bopp, which you got to see in Mexico. How cool is that?
Yeah. Yeah. What was that? Was that Christmas vacation?
No, spring break.
Spring break.
Spring break. For spring break, we booked a trip on the Copper Canyon Railroad.
Yeah, I've always wanted to do that.
And, yeah, it was pretty neat and spent... many nights, a week of nights on this train. It was pretty funny because we paid, through the travel agent and et cetera for this ride, and we got on a train car, and the first night, we started in Los Mochis and we came out to a place and we woke up in the morning and the car was sitting on the track all by itself. There was no train, nothing around anywhere.
That's scary.
And we were the only ones on the car.
Oh my gosh.
And then eventually an engine and a train, our car was silver, and all the cars probably had come from the United States, from U.S. train companies, that had gone broke, because nobody was running trains anymore.
Right.
So, we were in this silver car, and this train comes up, and the train is all these blue and white cars, which are kind of the national car, trains of Mexico, and they had hundreds of people on them.
Wow!
It's like all these people, were riding that train, But we had a car all to our own, and we had our own conductor,
And this was all arranged through a travel agent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because you probably, if you had done it on your own, you would have ended up on the blue and white.
But I especially remember the night that we were, well, we had been, the train had stopped at the stop that we were planning on getting off on, and we got off and we're looking for this bus that we're supposed to get on, and we found it, but it was full of people, and they were like all partying down, you know. And we got on this bus and start down all these dirt roads, and they were like passing around tequila.
Oh my gosh!
Singing and we got but anyway, it took us way out into the country to this place which didn't have any electricity.
Man.
And we got off the train and they you know, showed us our room, and it was really quite nice, but it had no electricity. They had no electricity.
That's amazing.
You know, they had lamps, kerosene lamps at the head of the bed, and that they would light that when it got dark. And
was that place at the bottom of the canyon?
No, it was
at the top.
It was up on the rim.
Okay.
And
so the train takes you to the rim.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, so we spent, so that night, though, that's why I was telling this story, is when we could see Hale Lock.
Oh.
Because, you know, we were way out in the country, so no lights, you know, no electric lights anywhere.
Yeah.
And Hale Lock was just amazingly bright.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's a good memory, you know.
Yeah, that was fun. And, well, I can tell the rest of the story is kind of they actually buried a pig.
Oh my God!
And did in coals, and did, you know, that a luau sort of thing, and we had dinner and blah blah blah,
You were the only Americans there.
Mm-hmm.
Man.
Went to bed, and then the next morning. We had booked a tour, and we got waiting for the tour in this old, like probably 1955 something. What was that? Not a Cadillac, but a kind of those big, what's that called?
Like a Studebaker? Or, no, what was from the 50s? Chevy?
It was,
Suburban.
Oh, a Suburban.
Suburban, that's it.
Wow, so this old Suburban.
Old Suburban comes up, and the guy's like, there's just one guy in it, and he says, "On your tour." But it was fun because he took us to his hometown, and
oh, that's cool.
And they were having a big celebration there, and I remember there was the very center of the town, of course, was a cathedral. A Catholic church, but it was Indian territory. It was, you know, Tarahumara, and the Tarahumara were there was a group of guys on either side of the there was a paved pathway that went up to the door of the church, front door, and there were guys on either side, and they had these, I couldn't see them, but Nancy could, and she described, she said, they were like can lids on the ends of sticks, and they were like tapping them on the on the sidewalk on both sides.
Okay.
Apparently to keep the evil spirits from coming up and coming into the church.
Huh, I wonder what the occasion was.
Yeah, I don't know. No, it was close to Easter. So.
Was it because of Easter, do you think?
Yes.
Yes, yes. Because don't the Yaqui Indians, they do stuff, but they dress like deer or something. But I'm thinking about those sticks with the cans on the end. But that was more to because of the spirits, to ward off the evil spirits.
Yeah.
But how cool to be there during that.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. Yeah. And another good memory. Well, that is a trip I would like to do, too. That sounds really amazing.
It was.
Okay. And then that was your spring break, and then you went back to work, it says here,
yeah.
For summer, and Nancy was thrilled to be starting summer vacation. I understand that. And that was the year that you found 1 acre in Parks, and you got it, and there was a tiny cabin on the property. That was your first place, huh?
That's right.
Yeah, and you could go there on the weekends and whatnot,
it was okay. It was. So this travel agent who we later discovered was kind of a
real estate
nefarious, real estate agent, who was kind of a nefarious character anyway, shows us this cabin and we're like, oh wow, so let's see, we thought, oh, yeah, we said, well, you know, has it been inspected? I mean, if we're going to buy it, you know, we need to know, does it have, has it been...
Like, has it passed approval by an inspector?
Yeah, exactly. And she took us into the garage, and there was a thing paid... A notice pasted on the wall that said it was inspected. So we're like, oh, great. Well, you know, then it's probably got a good foundation and all that stuff. And so we ended up buying it. Well, we found out later that it was passed as a garage, not as a house.
You're kidding.
Yeah. So it turned out that it was owned by the parents of the travel agent.
Oh no!
So she was selling it for them. And, but it was
Say again, Nancy. Real estate agent. Yeah, the real estate agent.
Yeah, real estate. I'm sorry.
Okay, and so was this a just a small little cabin?
Yeah, it was 500 square feet.
Really small.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was just a garage, and we wanted to make the garage into a bedroom, and then the other room would be a living room and a kitchen.
But and so you were sleeping, it was all one room, basically, with a bathroom and a garage.
And a garage, right. Right. And we wanted to make it into at least a cabin you could hang out in, at least.
And have a separate bedroom.
Right.
I don't. We'll have to find out as we go forward if that ever happened.
No. Well, it did happen, but it took a lot of money to make it happen because it turned out that the foundation was not deep enough to pass code.
Oh no!
And so the guy that we and I had worked at Walnut Canyon. And there I had met Pam Mack, who was a maintenance person, and her husband was a contractor. So we hired Virgil to be our contractor, and he at one time said, you know, a good match would really solve your problem here.
Oh.
Because we knew that the roof was kind of sagging in, you know.
Right.
So it needed a new roof, and the floor was kind of like, you know, wavy, you know.
Oh my gosh.
It had tile, but the tile wasn't even hooked to the ground. I mean, it was even loose tile, and it was a mess, but we were able to, Virgil was able to get it back, get it into shape, and then there was also a, was there a shed? There was a shed.
Oh, yeah, the shed.
We fixed up the shed anyway, too, so. So, I mean, we made it so we could spend weekends there eventually, but we spent a lot of money on it.
Yeah, it sounds like it. It also says here that this is the year that you had a horrible bike wreck and you needed to have your lip reattached. Do you remember that?
Yeah, of course.
Did a car hit you?
No. That one, see, I've had several bike wrecks and one time, that would be something that happened before I met Nancy, but where I was up on the south rim coming down a hill, I was coming off of the west rim, which is probably, I don't know, a couple hundred feet higher than the village, and you come down a big, really long hill.
Right.
It's really fun.
Right.
But anyway, I came down that hill, so it's, you know, and then turned and went across the railroad tracks, and then I was in, the clinic.
So you were going a little too fast and crossed, and then hit the tracks and. Went off
no,
the bike?
I apparently ran in. A witness said that I ran into a woman who jumped up, who stood back up. Well, I hit the woman, and which stopped my bike, of course. I fell off the bike, hit my head, lay unconscious on the ground.
Oh my gosh.
And the woman got up and ran off into the woods.
Oh my gosh.
Never to be seen again.
That is weird.
I know.
And you guys are so lucky that you weren't sued and that she ran into the woods.
Yeah.
Because she probably could have, you know, it's odd that she ran into the woods like that. That is weird.
Yeah, all I can figure is she was illegal or something.
Oh, could have been. And she, yeah, it's possible.
But anyhow, so that was a, kind of broke my clavicle when I fell off the bike. But the time that you're talking about, I was coming down. They had built those pathways back in the woods.
Yes.
Those paved pathways. And I was coming, coming to work? I don't remember. I guess I was. Must have been coming to work.
From your house.
From my house, which meant I had to come... down that pathway back behind the kind of behind where the store is, actually behind the housing, you know, the Park Service housing, because I had to go through Park housing, and then you come down this, anyway, coming down the hill. And the pathway had a white line down the middle of it, and I was staying on the right side of the white line, and it went down a hill, and then made a sudden turn to the right at the bottom of the hill,
Mm-hmm.
I went over to the road, the one that, the campground's on. You know, the camp comes down beside the campground. Anyway, it came down that way. Well, anyway, I came down that hill, and this woman from Mexico was riding her bike up the hill, and she was on the wrong side of of the white line. And so when I came around the corner, suddenly there she was.
Ooh.
And I hit her, and I came off my bike, flew over the top of her head, and apparently took a bite of hair on the way across.
Oh.
Because I had the hair in my mouth.
Oh my God. Sorry, but that is funny.
I had a helmet on.
Oh man, and thank goodness.
And I hit a tree head on.
Oh my gosh.
Apparently my lip was in the wrong place between my teeth.
And it was reattached up at the Grand Canyon, or did you have to go to Flagstaff?
I had to go to Flagstaff.
Was it like an ambulance thing, and you drove them?
No.
Oh, no.
I got a ride from I got a ride from Dave.
Lori.
Lori? Lori.
Lori, was it Lori?
Yes.
Lori gave me a ride.
To the hospital.
To the hospital.
Wow, that's a story.
And, I had to wait at the ER forever to get, it stopped bleeding, of course, but it still was hanging off of my...
And how did the woman fare, do you know?
Huh?
Was she okay?
Yeah, what she did is she jumped up and ran up the hill because the superintendent around at that time was Arnberger,
mm-hmm.
and his wife, he married his wife.
She was New Mexico, right?
From Mexico, right?
New Mexico, I think.
Well, that's where they met. Actually, they met in Texas at Big Bend.
Okay.
And got married there. But anyway, his wife was Mexican, and of Mexican descent, and so the woman ran up the hill up to the superintendent's house and pounded up on the door, and got Mrs. Arnberg was her name.
Okay.
Anyway.
Alvira. Okay.
Yeah. And she, there, of course, she could speak Spanish to her, and she could explain what had happened, etc. And so Mrs. Arnberger called the Rangers, and they drove down the pathway, which is about three quarters as wide as a police car.
And picked her up
and picked me up.
And picked you up. Okay, she told them what
she
happened.
Was okay.
Okay.
Other than missing.
Okay.
Some hair.
Wow. Do you think Arnberger was the superintendent who took on the National Guard?
No.
It was the person
was
right
before
him. Okay. Okay.
Oh God.
It's okay. It'll come to you. It'll come to you. It's okay. Let me just see what else we have. The bike wreck, okay. Just going to keep going here into 98. Okay, now it says in 98, you're sitting around a cozy fire in our new cabin. Was that after you had remodeled the cabin?
Yeah.
So it felt new. You had the wood stove in there?
Uh-huh.
Was that what it was? That's nice. That's nice.
Iron wood stove.
Oh, that's nice. Okay, yeah. Then.
It's one of those things where, you go in and the toilet water's frozen. And,
oh yeah.
Everything is the pipes are all frozen and stuff, and then you start a fire, and within probably half an hour the entire house is at about 80-90 degrees.
I hope that whoever bought it knocked it down and built something new. Who knows?
Well, it was the only heat, so.
Yeah. So, yeah, your pipes would freeze.
Well, actually, there were those heater things that.
You could plug in?
No, along the floorboard.
Oh, baseboard. Heaters. Okay.
Baseboard heaters. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, it said
but
that.
Those are really expensive to run those.
It says that in June of 98, Nancy fell on the Hermit Trail, had to be helivac'd out,
yes,
and taken for surgery. Whoa. And yes. You had a month immobile with your leg in the air,
yes.
2 months in a cast,
yes.
And 2 months in a brace.
Yes.
Okay, and then,
yeah, and
I mean, what happened? What happened? You were just hiking on the Hermit and you slipped on some rocks, or? Go ahead.
She's on the section just above Santa Maria Springs.
Okay.
And it gets steep there, and it's gravelly, so she started sliding and tried to stop herself, but she's sliding toward the edge, which,
ooh, right, would be bad.
It would be 20 feet at least if she didn't bounce and fall off of the next edge. But anyway, she didn't. She stopped herself. But when she got up and held her leg out, her foot was just banging like this.
Wow.
So it was badly broken.
Were you hiking with a friend? You were alone? Oh my gosh.
Her mom had just died.
Oh my gosh. You just wanted to sort of have some time to yourself after your mom passed?
Right.
And you were by yourself? Sorry. And then that happens. Yeah. That's a tough one. Yeah. And you just were out, you decided you'd go for a hike by yourself. How did they find you? Did a hiker find you?
A family passed me.
Oh, family passed you?
I passed.
Okay.
I knew they had to come my way.
Okay. And you knew they would come back that way.
Yeah.
How long were you laying there?
About 3 hours.
3 hours with a broken leg or foot. What was it? The leg. Lower leg.
Yeah. It was broken. Both bones were broken.
On each side of the lower leg. What is that, the tibia and fibia?
Yes.
Yes.
Like
yeah. Yes. Wow, that's pretty major. Were you able, you couldn't work then, right?
It was the very beginning of spring break. Or summer break.
2 weeks off.
2 weeks off? Because of... because of spring break?
No. Oh, was it spring break?
2 weeks of summer break.
Wow. So you were out for a while.
It was summer break, wasn't it? because you had the whole summer to recover.
Yes.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, I'm just butting in here because it's hard for Nancy to tell the whole story,
right.
But I've heard it so many times, I can tell it.
Well, that's pretty scary, yeah.
Yeah, but anyway, the family came along and she wrote a note for them, and she talked to them. The woman was the hot, strongest hiker, so I wrote a note and talked her into going up and finding somebody for help, and she came back really quickly and said that, I found this Japanese guy that was hiking out, and I gave him the note. And so Nancy was like, does he speak English? Does he know what he's, you know?
Did he speak English?
Well, I don't think so, but anyway, he ended up near the top of the trail, right into the trail crew.
Okay.
And Nancy had put her name on there, and the trail crew knew who she was, of course, because she's a teacher at Grand Canyon and friend of all of them. So anyway, they ran down the trail to get her and called in a helicopter.
Oh my gosh.
And the helicopter had to land with its runners, half of the runners on the ground and the other half hanging over nothing with the motor running.
That's incredible.
It was an incredible story.
That's a miracle they got you off the trail. How'd they even get her into the helicopter?
They picked her up, and, you know, she's on the gurney by that point, and put her in the helicopter.
Nancy, that is quite a story. What a day. Oh, my gosh.
They also shot her up with some good drugs, apparently, so she enjoyed the helicopter ride going out.
And did you go to Flagstaff?
Yes.
Okay. Where they have the good orthopedic surgeons.
Yes.
Good.
Well, the helicopter took her to the South Rim.
Okay.
And the only transport car they had was one of the police cars.
Okay.
And so they had to put her in the back with all the bars.
Oh my gosh, you're kidding.
She was like hiding.
They wouldn't think you were arrested for drugs or alcohol.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good story. Oh my gosh.
And then she went to the clinic and Tom Myers was the doctor, and she said, well, is this the part where you give me a bullet to put between my teeth to set it? And he said, no, you're going to Flagstaff.
He knew from looking at it that it was bad.
Yeah.
Where the bones weren't sticking out, were they? Thank God. I'm glad they got her to Flagstaff. What a story. Well, it also says in this year, this was a kind of a wild year, you lost your mother, you broke your leg, and then you, Keith, it sounds like you got to take a Park Service river trip that year from Lee's Ferry to Phantom for training, it says, quote unquote.
Uh-huh. Yeah. That was when why did names always leave my mind? Chuck Waller. Chuck Waller was my supervisor, and he had a story, something from history that he would read every morning just as, after we got on the boats before we shoved off.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. We're recording. Should I pause for a moment? Okay. Okay. So go ahead.
So anyway, he used to tell us, you know, to read a passage of this and that and the other thing. Well, anyway, we were on the lower part of the Little Colorado. And, you know, before it gets to, you know, where it meets the Colorado.
Yes, mm-hmm.
No.
Not that part?
Excuse me, I got that wrong.
Okay.
We were on the lower part of the Colorado before it meets the Little Colorado.
Okay.
And camped, and then we're all ready to shove off, and Chuck reads the part in John Wesley Powell's writing about, you know, and now the canyon has grown so big that we've become insignificant. We are but pygmies running up and down the beach, lost amongst the boulders.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, you finish the quote, and everybody pushed off, and our boatman was one from Moki Mac that I knew from then that the Park Service had hired to do our
trip.
And we push off, and we're rowing out into the middle of the river, and he turns to me and he says, "What's a butt pygmy?"
Are you kidding
says,
me?
And we're but pygmies. Ran up and down the beach, lost amongst the boulders. What's a butt pygmy? And I thought that was so funny.
It is
and
pretty
we've
funny.
We've been playing with that ever since. I mean, still at Phantom Ranch, we've got some pictures of these two guys were standing on the edge of the canyon looking away, and they're wearing absolutely nothing, and it's called, and they're called butt pygmies. But anyway.
Well, that was your trip, yes.
That was a trip, yeah.
Yeah. You know, I'm reading that book right now, and I've gotten to the part where the three guys decide to hike out.
Oh.
Yeah. It's a very good book.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It is.
So, okay. Let's see what else we have here. You're still remodeling your cabin in April of that year, and you had a cabin warming party. Okay, so let's see what time it's. We're at about 1 hour. Okay, wait, let's finish this year. We're going to finish up 98, and let's see what else. You went.
Well, the cabin warming party, we got to talk about.
Okay.
Because basically, you just had to grab a rock and carry it over to where we're building a labyrinth.
A labyrinth? Cool.
And then you're eligible for a margarita.
Okay.
Because we were making margaritas. But, you know, so it's a whole bunch of people and it showed up and they occasionally would just set their margarita glass, if it was empty or if it wasn't empty, they just set it down and, you know, go do something, not thinking that our dog was there.
Oh, no.
And so our dog was constantly drinking margaritas.
Poor dog got pretty drunk, I bet.
Yeah, really.
It was a big dog, though, right?
Yeah, pretty good size.
I think I've seen a picture. It was a big black dog, right?
Right. Right, she wasn't too big.
Yeah. Oh, there's a picture. Yeah, not really super. Yeah, something. That's not super big.
Yeah.
Nice size dog. Yeah, and then it says that you, Nancy, that year, you went to the North Rim for your 20-year reunion with your friends who started working there in 78. So that was the year of your 20th reunion with them. And it said, we went out to Toro Weep, where it's 3,000 vertical drop straight down to the river. Wow.
That's was that when we went to, there was a Grand Canyon, Grand Canyon Historical Society outing at Toro Weep?
I don't know if that was the same. She doesn't mention that. She did, it's not, you didn't mention that. It was just about your anniversary was up there, but you also were up there with your friends that year. I don't know if it was at the same time or not. Two different trips up there.
Two different times, okay.
Okay. And then it says, you, Keith, were sent to a National Association of Interpretation workshop in Anchorage, Alaska?
Right.
That's cool.
Yeah, that was fun.
Did you get to go, Nancy?
Yeah, Nancy went along.
Oh, Nancy went along.
Yeah.
Nancy was able to go along as the seeing eye wife.
Yeah, I was going to classes in the mornings, and she was kind of free to walk around downtown Anchorage in the mornings while I was working. But it was pretty wild. It was October. And every day was at least 5 minutes shorter than the day before.
Wow.
Because it was, you know,
getting cold too, right?
And probably the most memorable part of it was, you know, it was a Park Service thing, but one of the things that they did was they had a thing that you could sign up for in the evening called A Taste of Anchorage. And what it was touring all of the breweries in Anchorage.
Oh, that sounds fun.
So, you know, it was all these Park Service people. We just got sloshed, you know, drinking.
Were other wives along?
Huh?
Were there other spouses along?
I don't think so. I don't remember any others.
But you flew into Anchorage, huh?
Right.
Okay. Yep, and let's see.
It was Anchorage, and then we went and saw the...
Yeah, you did a plane ride,
pyramid,
you saw...
Or not the pyramid, the...
The glacier.
The glacier. We went and saw a glacier, yeah, and walked up to it, to the base of it.
I wonder how big it is now. Exit Glacier, it's called. Hopefully it hasn't melted to nothing.
It probably... I wouldn't be surprised. It was getting... Definitely getting smaller. It was, see, when we were there, it was, you could hear all this rumbling going on inside the glacier,
mm-hmm.
and which was little rock slide or ice slides, I guess it'd be, there was a lot of water coming out of the bottom of the glacier, and I took off my shoes and walked across it and announced to Nancy that it was cold. The water was cold.
She didn't take her shoes off, I hope, too.
No, she stood there and watched me do it.
Thought this crazy man I married. Oh, okay.
But it was one of these things where they had... signs along the road that came up to the base of the glacier had signs all along it,
mm-hmm.
that said the year,
uh-huh.
And that was the, you know, the, each of them was the year, you know, where the glacier, the foot of the glacier was that year.
Okay.
And it, it stretched for, got a good half a mile of, you know, dates of time, of years, and, you know, so the glacier was already shrinking.
Yeah.
Significantly then, so I can't imagine what's left.
And that
now
was kind of at the beginning of, you know, early global warming days when they were first starting to be, you know, where it was really more in the conversation, right?
Right.
So it's nice that they had that exhibit, you know, showing people.
Yeah.
How it was receding. Okay, well, I'm going to turn this off. We're at an hour and 5 minutes.